Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to the U's with your host, Avenger Satanus, and the Beast.
Thanks for tuning in. It's Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm TC Guy, and this is my co-host, Avenger Satanus. Avenger, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. Enjoying the last leg of my vacation. I've got literally just a few days left to go.
And, cool.
It's back to work for me.
So, I know a lot of this is job and person and personality dependent, but are you generally one of those people that by the end of vacation you like can't wait to get back to either work or at least some sort of structure, or, you know?
I am one of those people that at the beginning of my vacation can't wait to get back to work.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So,
usually by the end, if I'm like actually on a vacation, like going somewhere, I feel the same way. Even though I don't relish the idea of book work and showing apartments and renting and doing little bits of maintenance here and there.
Be set into a structured routine. So
yeah.
I think especially since I would think that men in particular are more analytical and mental fashion. They need that kind of structure and that kind of repetition to flourish, so to speak.
Yeah, I think all human beings need that. But yeah, maybe men in particular like something more structured and more logical, where I guess stereotypically, women, you know, if they're experiencing new things and it's exciting and, you know, it's a rush of different emotions that fulfills them in a certain way that, you know, the normal routine of life just doesn't do it for them. Also, a friend of mine, her name is Charlotte. She lives in Florida. She was telling me about not only the traditional Western astrology that we have, but the Chinese astrology, where I am the year of the tiger, because I was born in 1974. And there's something about the tiger that likes not being too far away from home for any length of time, and he likes his natural environment, and he doesn't stray too far away from that usually any one time. And I don't know. It's sort of an introverted relationship with his surroundings. And,
sure, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So that too probably plays a factor, and actually kind of counteracts and opposes my natural Sagittarius traits, where normally a Sagittarius, you know, loves to go out and do new things all the time, and you know, carefree and doesn't like structure and, you know, always into new things and exploring and traveling and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I kind of got both weird ends of the spectrum. So, I deal with that in my own way, I guess.
Cool. I'm going to take a minute here real quick, Venger, and I'm going to throw out our call-in number ahead of time so people that, you know, are coming in listening know that they can call in and at any point in time, and I've got the number. Should also be on the screen for you. It's 347-989-1371. And at any point in time, you can call in.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure the Beast would love to hear how you missed him last week, because he was on the beginning of his vacation, and the newest and second priest of Relay, Ego Diabolus, filled in for Beast Zeno, and he did a good job. But but yeah, we certainly missed you, and we're glad you're back.
Yeah, I last week I had to take advantage of having a Saturday off from work and go spend some quality time with the family. I don't do that very often, at least not on that particular day. So,
yeah. Well, as the Godfather said, a man who doesn't spend time with his family can never really be a man.
Right.
So that's great, and at some time I'll probably take a break from views too, some Saturday when I got shit going on that's insurmountable. But for the time being, I don't see anything stopping me.
Right. Well,
one thing I wanted to mention before we get into our topic of pornography is that I was playing poker more recently, and I had a couple good sessions in a row. I just go up to the local casino. It's like 40-minute drive. Called Ho-Chunk up in Wisconsin. But then last night was my third session, and, you know, it's really hard to keep a good streak going. And I played how I consider, to me, I think I played pretty amazing. But at the same time, I lost money. I lost about $200, exactly $200, actually. And so people might wonder, like, okay, Venger, so how can you play amazing and you still lost money? You know, you lost $200. Well, it took me 6 hours to lose that $200. I won a total of about six pots or six hands in that six-hour period. So that's about an hour, winning one hand per hour, which is really, really pathetic. And half of those, so about three, were bluffs. You know, anytime I connected with the board, which was very, very rarely, someone else said something better. But the reason I played amazing is because an average player probably would have gone broke about 10 times in the space that I played, because I was either, you know, between being cold decked and, you know, different coolers. You know, I had aces, and then someone else, and this is Texas Hold'em that I'm playing, by the way. So I had aces, and then I put this other guy on, like, a big pocket pair. So I had this sneaking suspicion that he flopped a set, and it turns out later he did. And I saved myself a bunch of money there. I flopped top two pair of kings and queens, one hand, and, you know, I lost the minimum when he rivered a straight. And so I got myself out of trouble a million different times. And, you know, I don't know. The universe just try to cock block me like it usually does. But you know what? Just like in all aspects of life, you can't let that, you know, bring you down, and you can't let that defeat you. You just got to keep going and play your best, not let it faze you. And, you know, there's always another session. There's always another game. And in time, you'll come out a winner. And so I feel good about my playing. I felt I played at least up to my abilities, if not exceeding them. And, well, you know, results are important, but results aren't everything. You know, you can be doing, like, a ton of ritual magic, and you may not be getting results right away, but that doesn't mean you're not doing good work or you're not actually influencing the world or the universe. It just might take time before you actually see the benefit of those positive results.
It's interesting. I think that most people probably don't know that you're such an avid poker player, but from my understanding, the middle name in your handle is actually directly related to that. Is that not right?
Yeah, that is. I go through streaks where I'm really into poker and I'm playing it all the time, and then I'm like, ah, fuck this game. And I just, you know, I take a bunch of months off. But yeah, you're right. Asnaz is sort of a derivation of sort of a combination of Persian and French originations of poker, which basically where poker came from, it was something about the ace card, like the ace card rules or something like that, and then that became poker. And that's, I think it originated from France, and then it somehow carried over into Persia, and Asnaz is, you know, it's borrowed kind of a little bit from the Persian of, like, the ace is the best card. And that's, it kind of evolved into poker later, so, yeah.
Awesome. So, I was trying to think of some clever kind of lead-in that had to do with being fucked in poker and how that went perfectly with our subject to pornography, but I really failed to draw the connection before the time ran out. So let's just go ahead and take a look at pornography or porn. Anything you'd like to point out before we get started?
One thing I wanted to mention or bring up is, like, sometimes I don't know how the porn industry can keep itself as much in business as it can with all the free porn that's now out there on the internet. I mean, I used to buy, for some people, I guess this would be a staggering amount. I probably spent about $100 maybe a month or every other month on porn, you know, on magazines and DVDs and just porn-related stuff like that. But I haven't spent a dime on porn in, you know, a year and a half or something, maybe 2 years, all because of the internet. Because, you know, why go and buy it if anything you want is right on your computer screen? So I don't know how the porn industry can continue to be a multi-billion-dollar industry if you know, there's so much free stuff that it kind of negates the necessity of going out and buying it.
Well, actually, I think I have a general answer for that. Let me think of exactly how I want to phrase this. Let's say that in this country, it's mandatory that everybody's given a bicycle at the age of 5 years old. It's just your plain Jane, average, everybody's got it, bicycle. You know, just two wheels, a chain, a sprocket that moves it along, a pair of handlebars, and a seat, and the seat's not even cushioned. On the other hand, if you want to spend an extraordinary amount of money, you can have a nice GT Mongoose with a patented leather custom seat. You can have custom forks made, ultralight frame, you know, custom handlebars, and it's minimal. If it's anything really good, if there's any plot or structure or actual substance within it beyond just the physical aspect of sex, it's, you know, always going to end up that that's the portion of it that you have to buy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they give everybody, you know, it's like passing out a single cigarette a day at school, knowing that eventually somebody's going to...
90-minute porn movie. And, you know, I've seen vintage stuff from, like, the 70s. I've seen stuff that they made yesterday. You know, I think if you do a little bit of searching, and really, that's half the fun, I think, you can find damn near anything for free. And I think that's one of the beauties of the internet, is that there's a ton of free porn everywhere.
You can actually put an image and everything on it. But no matter what, ultimately, it's, I guess, the same reason that you prefer to own a hard copy of a book versus reading a PDF online.
Yeah, I can see that, but yeah, I suppose if there's like something that really speaks to you, that it's like a favorite of yours, or it's got something that you really, really enjoy, then yeah, I can see someone, you know, tracking it down and buying the actual DVD to watch on their TV, like in the bedroom or in the living room or something like that. But
have you ever grown up, like when you were a teenager, did you ever have that friend that was like totally into Kiss? And he would go out and buy all their albums, all the action figures, Ace Furlong's spandex pants, the approved spandex pants, you know.
Not really Kiss, no, but I had a lot of toys growing up, you know, like He-Man, Transformers, and G.I. Joe. You know, if something really cool came out, chances were...
Right, but if you ever had a friend that was a total fanatic about it,
I have a friend who's like a total fanatic about something, like Thundercats and weird shit like that.
Right. Well, whatever it was, I mean, they had absolutely everything that you could possibly think of that was in relation to that specific subject matter.
Right.
One of the psychological aspects about pornography itself is after a period of time, you become somewhat desensitized to it, and it becomes more like a reality TV type feel, where, you know, you become familiar with specific characters within the porn industry and different roles that they've played. And you know, it's so that, of course, that leads to building up of heroes
No, I see what you're saying. I'm not saying that, like, why isn't the porn industry just collapsing in on itself like a dying star? I'm just saying I could see it moving from a multi-billion-dollar industry to a multi-million-dollar, or even, like, you know. I guess this is one of my predictions, that it's going to be eventually a less profitable, less, you know, lucrative, at least to make and sell porn when there's so much of it just free, just like walking around. I mean, I guess it's the same thing with music. You know, back then when Napster was around and other things where you can download free music, the record companies, you know, were hurting. And they were still making money, and the musical artists were still making money, but just not as much as they were. It kind of, you know, took a downturn. And I don't think porn will ever be as regulated in that sense as like stealing music, whatever, from like Napster.
See, the thing that porn has on music, and this is the deal, is porn has always been something that you had to actually seek out and get, where music was something that was more readily available. Pornography, I mean, as far back as any civilized culture ever on this world goes, as far back as ancient man, the act of pornography has been taking place, and not too long after its birth or its conception, it became something that you had to pay to experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's had millennia's time to figure out how to become this monstrous entity that it is. The truth of the matter being, we don't really know how big of a monster the pornography industry is. Just on the Wikipedia page, and this is something I was starting to talk to you about just seconds before we went on the air, it states that in 98, Forrester Research published an article reporting just the online adult content industry to estimate earnings between $750 million to $1 billion in annual revenue. Now,
what year is this?
In fucking 1998.
Oh, 98. Oh, so over.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, over 10 years ago. Now, the thing of it was that they figured the entire industry was an $8 to $10 billion a year industry. But 3 years later, this other company comes by, and they figure out in 2001 that the entire industry is anywhere from $2.6 billion to $3.9 billion. So what's interesting here, what's highlighting here, is that within a three-year span, these authorities and the actual economic value of this industry, they can't even come.
You know, whether it's from the IRS or whatever companies.
Sure, but that's
all. That or you know, maybe they can track it over the internet or something.
Well, the,
well there's got to be. The numbers of, like, how big the industry is and, you know,
sure,
what the numbers are, what it's doing.
The question becomes, though, man, I mean, when do you stop counting on you know, who's the end of the line as far as the industry itself goes? And which umbrella are you looking at?
Okay. No, that's debatable. I mean, yeah, do you include, like, you know, I guess Playboy in that? Or, you know, do you include all the companies that sell used panties, you know, online, you know, I understand that, you know, where do you draw the line? Where does it stop? Where does, you know, the porn industry begin?
Right.
But,
the problem is that pornography is, first of all, it's sort of a, it's a very taboo act, and it's very, what's the word that I want to use? It's very distinct in its description.
Really? I think it's more vague.
It's very
no
distinct.
One can really define exactly what pornography is. It's all
pornography
it's all
is. Pornography is the depiction of explicit sexual subject matter for the purposes of sex.
Obscene.
You're talking about aspects of it where the general concept is that it is the actual act of capturing or depicting.
Right.
This
but my
obscene
point is
nature.
The aspect, right. But my point is the aspects is the general conception and that it's all, you know, it's all within a big whole. It's all connected.
Sure, but it all falls under one very specific blanket. It is a picture of a sexual act.
Exactly. But what's, you know, who's to say the sexual act? Okay, what I'm saying is that to properly define a sexual act, you have to include what the observer finds sexual about a certain thing. Which
sure,
back to the example that for some people, watching a girl pee is a sexual act because it gives them a certain sexual stimulation and satisfaction.
Yeah, I understand
but
that.
But for someone else, it isn't. For someone else, it's not sexual at all. And you know, for someone, you know, watching a guy and a girl in a missionary position having sex, as strange as this is going to sound. Is not very sexual, and it doesn't produce much sexual stimulation. For some people, you know, maybe they need to see a girl with golf balls up her ass or something like that, and that, for them, sexual. Anything besides that comes off as non-sexual.
Sure. I'll agree that that's completely subjective as far as the actual content of itself goes, but what pornography is very specific. It's what the sexual act is, that's not.
Okay. I understand that's one definition, but when you talk about the porn industry, I don't think you can limit it to that.
I guess that's a relative question by itself.
Right. I think by older standards, yeah, that's the best way to define pornography. But in the 21st century, I think you really got to look outside the box. And whatever gets a person going, that's sexual. And that's a part of that person's sexuality. And whatever they find stimulating, that's how I would define pornography. But I understand where you're coming from too, and it is hard to draw the line because, some person can think that, a man cleaning a window is very sexual. And if that's the case, then there's really no limit. And, like, what isn't sexual to someone? So that means everything is pornography, which then, by that standard, means that nothing is pornography. So it's all a big crazy jumble, I guess.
Here's what I think. I think that if I draw a piece of artwork, and that specific piece of artwork depicts something that I think is highly erotic or very sexual in nature, it's something that I believe is going to give its viewer the urge or the that's going to create a stimulation in them sexually, then that is, it's pornography. It's when I assign the value to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, pornography is it's a symbol.
Right.
It doesn't matter the medium. It can be books, magazines, postcards, sculpture, anime, an audio clip, video, you name it. It can be any of that stuff. It's a symbol. It's an idea. It's a concept. It's something that is being portrayed for the object of inciting sexual excitement.
Right. Yeah, no argument here.
I'm sorry? No argument?
I said, yeah, you're right. No argument here.
So, I think, excellent, very, very fascinating industry all by itself. And if you look back, through the actual history of it, the Romans were hardcore pornography freaks. They put it everywhere. And then the Victorian era came along, and they were prudish, and dresses that made them the size of the room, and extravagant balls, and glass slippers, and
that too was sexualized in a way, but very different way, where everything was kept off stage.
Right.
But still, I mean, the more you repress something, the larger it gets. In a more hidden, secretive way. So, really, you can't stop or turn off human sexuality. I think that's what they were trying to do in the Victorian era, but of course, it backfired, and now we've got probably one of the greatest or largest sexual revolutions, ever in human history, probably going on right now. And I think a lot of that is to do with pornography and the acceptance of pornography in today's society. Going back to my original point, though, just looking at the economics, let's say there was, pornography was pizza, and there might be some great pizza out there that you can buy, but if there are pizza places in every single city that give away free pizza, that's got to hurt the businesses that are actually selling pizza for money, especially if there's two pizzas right next to each other. If there's a free pizza, which let's be honest, tastes pretty damn near the quality of the pizza you pay for. And then there's the pizza you pay for. Like, 9 times out of 10, a person is going to go for the free pizza. I mean, that's just standard economics. And I think in the long run,
that stuff, but they have the aspect of actually being able to go live to watching somebody or, you know, chatting with them and having them do whatever you want. And you have the whole virtual aspect.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean.
But there's, I mean, yeah, I'm not going to, yeah. I mean, there's strip clubs, too, where you can do that.
Right.
Sure, that's definitely going to be a factor. But in just, like, DVD sales, I would assume that.
Well, they were relatively expensive. I mean, $50 to $100 for, you know, good titles here and there, you know. But every once in a while, you would hit these lower brand companies that would have specials like three for $30.
Right. That's the area that I went for. Like the three DVDs for $30. So, you know, you buy two DVDs for $10, and you get the third one free. You know.
Right. The thing of it is, in business, there are many ways to make money. One of the ways that you make money is you produce a product that's intendedly only going to be sold to other distributorships, and they're going to try to sell it. And kind of trickles down in that aspect. In the meantime, you know, these people are, you know, paying you for the products that they're going to receive, whether it sits there and it takes 6 months to sell or not. If you've created a network and a means to generate a dollar versus sitting and waiting for $50, you know, the money turns over more rapidly, so you can ask for less or give it away for free even and have an angle.
Right. Okay,
you know,
yeah, I understand that.
It's I would say it's a very complex business. And
okay, that's a good question. That's difficult to answer, I think. I mean, a lot of people, I guess, would say yes, but it seems to be a totally different business and business model than traditional, like, hardcore porn companies.
In my opinion, it's more like a showcase, a full-body showcase of women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like going to a high-end car show.
Mm-hmm.
Looking through a car magazine, you know, you're looking through it for the purposes of appreciation of the actual, you know, entity being pictured, depicted.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe just being part of the generation that grew up with internet porn, you know, just swooning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can hear from some people calling in, and they could let us know if they used to buy porn in, like, a shop, I guess, in, like, an adult video store. They used to buy DVDs and you know, magazines and things like that, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago, and now, you know, and now what are they doing? Now are they purchasing just as much or more or a lot less? You know, and is that because of the internet or is it because of other factors? I don't know. Maybe if people can't call in today, they can email us at the ooze or whatever.
It's the ooze at fearthebeast.com.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Good idea, Benjer.
Yeah. Because it would be nice to get sort of a sampling of what people are doing and people's spending habits. And I don't know. And I could be way off base and very wrong. And, you know, but by the records of next year, the porn industry could be doing double what it was doing 5 years ago. I just know that, you know, I've gone from, say, $75 a month to zero a month in my spending. And personally, I'm happy about that because, hey, if I don't have to spend money on porn, I can spend money on other stuff, which is great. And I can get all of the porn I want right on my computer screen. I think that's like one of the coolest things in the world. So you know, I'm happy. I don't have an extra grind. I'm not complaining about anything. I'm actually overjoyed. I just find it difficult that, you know, my happiness isn't making someone else, say the big porn companies, very sad. Because usually it's one or the other. Usually everybody isn't happy. If one person is really happy, the other person is very unhappy. And that's just the way of the universe, because the universe is a fucking cock, asshole, dick sucker.
That's why we care about you guys' porn watching habits, so email us.
That's why we care about everything. That's why we care about, you know, the cult and the people in the cult, and we care about the human race in general, and, you know, society and culture, not only America.
Pieces are not actually technically classified as pornography.
Mm-hmm.
So, because people are, I guess, paying to see a show, and the show just happens to have sex in it,
mm-hmm.
it works out that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the striptease, I guess, because you're actually watching it physically happen. I just thought that was really awkward that, you could go, you know, watch two people have sex and pay to get in, and it wouldn't be considered pornography or pornographic. Yeah, the same goes for visiting nightclubs.
Mm-hmm.
But rather, because of the actual root meaning of the word, it's directly connected to the actual description or illustration of the act itself.
Yeah.
Smoking is bad, yeah. So is sex. But you got to do that to procreate, so.
Sex is awesome in all its myriad forms. Smoking is almost always bad.
Nah. The excessive smoking is what's bad.
Excessive smoking. Okay.
Let me explain to you. Your lungs actually heal very, very quickly. It's one of the fastest healing organisms in your body. If you smoked a cigarette a month or a cigarette every 3 months, kind of like I do with alcohol, I may go a year and a half between drinks of alcohol.
Okay.
It would do no damage to your body at all. It's actually
I totally agree. But I have never in my life found anyone that smokes like one cigarette a month or one cigarette every 3 months. I mean, I guess if someone's out at a bar and the mood strikes them, I guess.
An anomaly, though. He will go sometimes up to 5 years between having cigarettes.
Right.
And he's done it over the past 15 years.
Right.
He's gone back and forth, and it's insane. You can literally light one cigarette, smoke the whole cigarette, enjoy the shit out of it, and not think about one again for 5 years.
Yeah, that's great if someone can do that. I have no problem with that. It's just, that's, you know, extremely rare. That's not going to do you any good. So that's why I implore anybody and everybody listening, you should quit smoking. Smoking is bad. You know, I mean, sure, if you want to have a cigarette or two, like, every month, or if you want to smoke, like, you know, a cigar or two every month or something, you know, that's different. But the habitual, usual understanding of, like, you know, the smoking habit.
What I'm trying to make is I'm trying to downplay the importance of its act within my everyday life.
Okay, that's good.
If that makes any sense to you, you
sure.
know, like, it's habitual. You get into a car and immediately you light a cigarette.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very important thing for me. It was before my keys even went out into the ignition. It was part of the actual ritual act itself, the opening of the door, the setting down into the car, the pulling the seatbelt over my lap, the putting the cigarette in my mouth and lighting it, putting the keys in the ignition, checking my mirrors, so forth. It was my exact same routine every time.
Right. That's a great illustration of how mechanical and automatic people are. Things happen by ritual and routine that we don't even think about. We just do because that's what we've always done, or we've fallen into a habit of it, or we just watch other people and we mimic them. You know, people can't actually do anything. They can just, you know, they only do what they're programmed to. So
right.
It's not actually doing, it's just like going through the motions. And
right, which is why instead of telling people not to smoke myself, I'm going to tell them, if you're going to smoke, want to smoke. You know, want that cigarette. You know, let that be, you know, it's a conscious, I'm smoking a cigarette. Not let it be a secondary nature thing.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. Although I think that point is probably going to be lost on the majority of people. For those that would understand that, that's a valid message.
You don't think that people would understand that?
No. I think people would just want to find a justification, not only for smoking, but for doing anything. You know, if you're used to eating a bowl of, you know, brownies and ice cream for dinner, like every day, and you told someone to, you know, if you're going to be doing that, you know, really be there in the moment and do it consciously and, you know, and want that as you're eating it. And do it not because of out of habit, but because you want it. I think a lot of people would just be like, oh, yeah, yeah, totally. Like, yeah, I want it. And, yeah, I'm mindful of that. And, yeah, I'm awake. But really they're not. They're just... They would just want to justify it to themselves that, like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. I can eat a bowl of brownies and ice cream, like, every night for dinner. It's all good, you know. Because people don't want to stop, you know, especially if they have some sort of addiction or if they're in some sort of habit or routine or ritual that comes naturally to them. You know, people will look for a reason to continue to be what they are because people don't want to change and people don't want to do anything that's uncomfortable or that's scary or unknown or different. And that's just human nature. Unfortunately, that's one of the ways that the universe designed us. And that holds a lot of people back. And it keeps a lot of people from living up to their potential.
Well, I think if there was any question as to what I really meant by that statement, you've certainly more than cleared it up.
Yeah. Just out of ignorance, you know, people don't know about the work because it's, you know, because it's an esoteric kind of school of thought that not a lot of people are exposed to. So, and that's one of the things that we try to do here at the Cthulhu Cult. We try to make people aware of the work, and for those that want to utilize it, we try to, you know, communicate and discuss and be there and be sort of a support group. It's more entertaining. It's more interactive for me. I'm just kind of a natural voyeur. If you're with a woman and you're having sex with her, you really got, unless you change positions, you really only got one angle to look at. You only have one woman to look at and one particular view that you can focus on. You got to do everything else by your imagination. But if you're watching porn, you can look at her. You can look at the porn and what's going on there. You know, it's... I don't know.
It makes use of the fact that he's shorter than this girl and he's doing her doggy style and she's got her head laid down on the side and he puts his foot and steps down on her head. Well, he's...
okay.
It was hilarious. It's funny. It's like watching Looney Tunes. And, you know, the anchor's dropping. It's just there's this overly human aspect to it. And
right.
There's certain things that you can see are purposeful, vast. It's, I don't know, it's just very humorous to me.
Although when I think of extreme porn, I think of like there's some companies that specialize in the more rough, like forced, more rape influenced kind of porn.
Sure, and you know,
there's two guys giving a girl like anal sex at the same time, and just like, you know,
yes, yeah, actually, during that phase that I was talking about earlier where I acquired quite a bit of movies, yes, I was buying it for its entertainment value and not in the fashion of sexual.
Really?
Huh. Mm-hmm. But see, I'm also, to me, all the stuff that you can buy locally is typically very mundane and common.
Right.
You know, like, to see a guy, you know, putting two fists up job on neurolinguistics programming and something that I so will have to go into in the future. Do we have an idea of our lineup of what we're going to be talking about in the future here? Because this is like...
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. Well, as long as people are going to try to email us, people can email me, you know, just go to our website. CultofCthulhu.net. My email's right on there. Email us different show topics that you'd like to see. And sometime in the next week, I'll probably make another video outlining the different topics we're going to go and talk about. One last thing. I was on YouTube, and if you go to Bad Advice Good Times, that channel on YouTube, they've got some hilarious and awesome Lovecraftian videos. So yeah, do that and email us. That's pretty much all I got to say. But yeah, great show.
Awesome. So we'll catch you fuckers next week.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. The Ooze does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the